So saying I'm a little bit of an imposter because I wasn't in yeshiva when Rav Amital was alive. But nonetheless, I'll say two things. Number one is that if you were to ask me if I could have dinner with somebody, whether they're dead or alive, if I could pick one person to have dinner with, it would probably, or lunch with, or whatever the exercise is, it would probably be Rav Amital. And I don't know what I would say to him, but he's first of all a fascinating person, but also an extremely he was a very special person. And between reading the there was a book published of Hasbeidim shortly after his death, dozens of Hasbeidim collected, and over time you get to really know the person through reading all these Hasbeidim. So I have this sense that I have this growing sense that I got to know him, but just the stories also that I heard from my own Rebbeim about him have really impacted me and my Avodas Hashem. So let me share a little bit about him before we go on. Rav Amital was born as Yehuda Klein in 1925 in Romania. What changed in his life was that his family was still in Europe during the Holocaust. The Nazis didn't get to his area until around 1944, at which point most of his family was sent to Auschwitz, but he was sent to a labor camp. And while one day in one of these camps has to be a complete nightmare that we should never know, it seems he was actually not there for such a long time. Already towards the end of 1944, the Russians had freed the camp, and he was able to make Aliyah already in 1944 before the war was over. And in fact, it's said that he didn't celebrate birthdays in his family, but the second night of Hanukkah was a day that he sort of celebrated as his birthday, because that was when he arrived in Eretz Yisrael. So that was a very special day for him, the second night of Hanukkah. So for him, the Holocaust represented the ultimate Chilul Hashem and the destruction that took place in Europe, the moral destruction in terms of what the Nazis had carried out, but also the destruction of Torah from the Jewish world and the destruction of Jews. So on the one hand, that was part of his experience in life, but on the other hand, he also, just a few years later, was part of the creation of the State of Israel. He fought in the army at the time, and he experienced that as part of his life also. And for him, the creation of the State of Israel was the biggest Kiddush Hashem, that it enabled the Jewish people to have a home, enabled Torah to flourish. So he made it his life mission to create and to further this Kiddush Hashem by teaching Torah in Medinat Yisrael. He was instrumental creating the Hester Yeshiva movement, where people serve in both the army and learn in yeshiva. And you very much get the sense that the ideas of Kiddush Hashem, Chilul Hashem, really stuck with him for his entire life. It was very important to him that the State of Israel carry out its mission of being a Kiddush Hashem. In terms of his character, he was known to be charismatic. He had a little bit of this Hasidic Rebbe sort of style to him, but at the same time, he was self-deprecating in sort of like a humorous way, from what's described. And he was very humble. He didn't want to create. He says he didn't want to create Amital and Ketaniim. He didn't want to create little Amitals. He didn't believe that his students should think the way he does. In fact, there are famous stories. One particular famous story when he was known to be a very vocal leftist, and not the far left, but he was relatively left in Israeli politics. Even had sort of his own political religious left party. So there would be Yeshivat Har Tzion was sort of the part of the heart of the. They were instrumental in sort of resettling Gush Etzion after it was destroyed in 1948. It came back in 1968, and he very much was part of the discussions going on in the State of Israel. There was one time they were having a debate, and Rav Amital shared his views about the peace process or whatever was going on with the settler movement. But then somebody else in yeshiva named Hanan Parat, who shared very different views than Rav Amital, was invited up to share his views in the Beit Midrash right after Rav Amital, and Rav Amital did not rebut. He let Hanan Parat have the last word. So he very much believed in in intellectual openness and people not having to share the same views as him. He very much focused on the idea that the Torah was given to human beings and not to angels. So he often would quote the Kotzker Rebbe, who would quote the Pasuk, "Yanshe Kodesh Ti Unleash, be holy people." To me, Rav Amital would say that Hashem wants holy people, but not angels. The Torah wasn't given to angels. So the result of that was that, A, you know, he believed in embracing, you know, we should embrace our weaknesses and our shortcomings as part of what it means to be human, and we should learn to live with that and grapple with that, and obviously to be our best, but also to accept our humanity. He didn't expect people to be perfect. He thought that it was important to enjoy this world. I just saw something recently where it's described that, whereas Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, his co-Rosh Yeshiva, was a little more ascetic, Rav Amital would enjoy a whiskey and a fine cigar because, you know, because that's part of being human, is enjoying what Hashem gave us to this world. And also this idea of being very normal in Avodas Hashem, entirely beinu le'avdecha be'emes, that we should serve Hashem in truth. So we have to be authentic in the way we serve Hashem. So get rid of the shtick and the fakeness and everything. We should be authentic. And I think another outgrowth of that was also that he described himself as being a Yehudi Pashut. I'm just a simple Jew. Happened to not be just a simple Jew. He, it's said that he knew thousands and thousands of responsa by heart. He was a very big Talmid Chacham. But at the same time, his job was just to be an Oved Hashem, to serve Hashem in the best way that he could. He davened at a Baal Bat Shul in Yerushalayim, and he would listen when they did Mishnayot between Mincha Ma'ariv, even though he didn't necessarily need that learning, but he sat with the rest of the Baal Batim and learned with them because that's what he felt like was important. Last story that I'll share, and this will sort of transition into what we're talking about tonight, is one of my Rebbeim had asked, was asked to go recruit for Yeshiva outside of Eretz Yisrael, America, perhaps the United Kingdom also. So he went to Rav Lichtenstein and asked for advice, and Rav Lichtenstein said whatever he said. He went to Rav Amital, and Rav Amital said something to the extent of, you'll be fine, just don't do anything stupid. That was just, Rav Amital was just a very straight shooter, very simple, you know, on the one hand, sort of asserting, again, you know, his confidence in his students, that they can be confident in themselves, but also just very sort of, he had a very uncanny common sense. When we talk about common sense, so common sense often isn't so common. But just the stories you hear about Rami talking, he had that real sort of common sense. So that sort of leads me into what I want to discuss for this year tonight. What I decided to do was just to take a piece of his Torah, and I thought we should discuss it, because the best way to honor the memory of a Torah scholar is to learn the Torah. So this particular Torah that I'm discussing is taken from this book, which is sort of the virtual background's messing up. It's called Resis Eital. It's a collection of his of some of his shirim and essays. So he has an essay in there about the concept of Shomer B'tayim Hashem, that Hashem watches the simple. So I think as we'll go on, I think, you know, the story that I just told sort of illustrate that. I think if you had to ask Rav Amital about risk taking, he would probably just say something along the lines of, you know, don't do stupid things, you know, be intelligent in the decisions that you make. But it's a real halachic sugya, and he gave it a worthy analysis. So I'm sharing it on the screen for those who are on the computer. I'll open from my own perspective. I'll open with this. There was when I was in camp, we would go whitewater rafting sometimes, and in the gift shop of this whitewater rafting place, they sold T-shirts. Their T-shirts had all sorts of quips or whatever, but there was one T-shirt that said, you know, you can either fall off your couch and die, or you can go whitewater rafting. So truth is, I don't find the T-shirt to be so humorous at this point, because someone who was in my brother's age actually passed away doing whitewater rafting with camp, and it was a really horrific story. But it does sort of show that on a daily basis, we have to make decisions that involve a spectrum of danger, right? So on the one hand, okay, the couch example is a little bit extreme. For the most part, most of us, you know, being on the couch per se isn't going to cause any danger. But on a daily basis, we might encounter all sorts of things that potentially could be dangerous. Driving a car is potentially dangerous. Crossing Queens Boulevard, I'm told, can be fairly dangerous sometimes. And maybe on, you know, another extreme, you have whitewater rafting, and then you have complete things that are, you know, even more completely reckless than that. So there's a pasuk in Tehillim that says, "Shomer p'taim Hashem daliti daloti v'li yoshia." The Lord protects the simple. I was brought low, and He saved me. So this pasuk actually comes from Hallel, and we say full Hallel. We cite this verse. So it's a little funny that that we say that. So when we say we translate the word p'taim as being simple, but it sounds like simple isn't just merely simple, but with something. When we say Hashem protects the simple, sometimes there's like an implication that one might be doing something that might be not so wise or smart. And the question is, a lot of the question is, you know, to what extent do we rely on this, that Hashem protects people even when there are risky situations? I think this has a little bit of relevance to COVID, because for a while it was fairly simple that most things were dangerous. We were told to stay home. Lock down, stay home, save lives. It was stay home and save lives was the line that you would see on the billboards on the highway. And that wasn't just, it wasn't a matter of shomer b'taim Hashem. It was a matter of mamash pikuach nefesh, or close to safek pikuach nefesh. And we know that pikuach, you know, when faced, you know, actual seriously life-endangering situations, so we're supposed to stay away from those. Minat Torah. So we knew for a while that that was the case. But what about now? On the one hand, you know, there's still some danger that lurks. But on the other hand, there's a spectrum of inherent risk in activities that may allow, you know, some activities that are relatively not so reckless. Even if there's a possibility of danger. So actually, I don't have an example right here, but I've seen various lists or charts that take various activities that you could be doing right now and plot them in terms of their danger. So, for example, you know, going for a walk, you know, outside where you're not interacting with anybody is considered to be, you know, one of the least risky activities. Gathering in a baseball stadium with sold out seats would be a fairly risky situation. So now there's a whole spectrum of risk. So the question is, obviously, we can't put ourselves in a situation of complete risk, but what about situations where maybe it's not so clear? So, you know, danger might be far off, but we know that there's some. So there are a few examples in the Gemara where things are justified by Shomer B'Tayim Hashem. So in Masechet Avodah Zarah, we're told that we're not supposed to leave drinks that are exposed or uncovered for a certain period of time, certainly not overnight. A lot of relevance of this today, separate question, but according to the Gemara, that was the case. So the mouth of the fig was not subject to the halacha of exposure. And so why is that? And it says that a person can eat grapes and dates at night, doesn't have to worry about exposure, because it says Shomer P'tayim Hashem. So it seems like that, so exposing these items could seem to be dangerous, but in this case, it seems like when it comes to, you know, the mouth of a fig, so we don't have to worry about this halacha, because it's difficult to follow. Hashem preserves the simple, and it's you know, whatever risk is there, Hashem will protect you. Right, another example in Yevamot was that when it comes to a cloudy day, or when the wind is blowing south, and again, I'm not going to get into the details of the significance of these phenomena, but according to the Gemara, one should not circumcise or let blood, because there's danger involved. But nowadays, when many are accustomed to ignoring these safeguards, the verse, "The Lord preserves the simple," applies. So, again, these things seem to be considered somewhat dangerous, but now, the ha'ina, the dashu barabim, so here it's specifically saying because people ignore these safeguards, and that's the custom. So Hashem will preserve the simple, meaning that even though, you know, it might be a little bit risky, so we can perhaps rely on Hashem's protection in this situation. Right? And final example is with bloodletting. So the Gemara and Shabbos, and I think that's going to be coming up for those who do Daf Yomi. This is coming up very shortly, I think. not doing the daf, but keep hearing things about the daf that are somewhere in this neighborhood. So the Gemara says the only one who has chus avos should do bloodletting on Monday or Thursday, because the court on high and the court, the earthly court, are aligned. That's bad news. So what about Tuesday? So, you know, Mars is down during those hours, so that and Mars is red blood. That's bad. So what about Erev Shabbos, where Mars also dominates? So on Erev Shabbos, people do bloodletting. Oh, that was the custom. So again, Kevan Dashu Beirabim Shemar Taima Hashem. Since the masses sort of do this, and they Dashu sort of has the implication of trampling. So since the masses engage in this risky activity, it seems like Shomer Psaim HaShem. So here's the big question. Are we saying that, are these things allowed simply because everyone does them? So are we just saying that, you know what, everybody's doing this, so why should you be extra strict? You know, it's a common activity, so you can do it. Or is the fact that everyone does it defining the situation as not being dangerous? Okay, so from the fact that everybody's able to do it and not have a problem, so that must mean that whatever activity we're talking about is not dangerous. So Rav Amital actually cites an example of and a footnote of smoking, that according to, you know, one formulation, right, the fact that everybody spoke, so Shomer Psaim HaShem, so maybe that would have worked with smoking. I don't know about today, but many years ago, maybe that would have worked, because at the end of the day, it's true, everybody was doing it, was sort of an accepted practice, and so there was no special obligation to do something, to not do something everybody else was doing, so fine. But if we're going to say Shomer Psaim HaShem means that we're defining the action as not being as dangerous as we might have thought it is, so we know the dangers of smoking, so Shomer Psaim HaShem wouldn't apply. So that would be an implication of that, right? So, like, anytime you do an activity that you have to sign a waiver, so there must be some element of Shomer Psaim HaShem in that. Like, the fact that you have to sign a waiver must mean that there's some sort of risk, and then you're sort of agreeing to do the risk. So are you allowed to do activities that require you to sign a waiver? So there's probably a range of activities where you have to sign a waiver. So some are probably relatively non-risky, but, you know, whatever company you're, you know, is running your activity, they don't want any liability. So you're signing the waiver just, you know, because it's supposed to be safe, but they just want to cover themselves. Or perhaps you're doing something that really is dangerous, but nonetheless, people seem to be willing to take the risk, and it's reasonably safe enough. So question becomes, you know, what if I don't want to rely on Shomer Psaim HaShem? So does this mean that it is sufficiently dangerous, whatever activity I'm talking about is sufficiently dangerous enough that I don't, you know, that I could even not do a mitzvah or violate a mitzvah because I don't want to rely on Shomer Psaim HaShem? Or are we saying that there's pretty much no concerns with Pikuach HaShem? So that's when we talk about Shomer Psaim HaShem, we're trying to figure out, like, what's a level of risk? Are we trying to say that, you know, the fact that we can rely on Shomer Psaim HaShem means that there's absolutely no risk at all? Or does it mean that you might theoretically be allowed to rely on it to do the activity, but you're acknowledging that there's some sort of risk involved in it? Right, can I lechatchila rely on this, or is it perhaps better not to? So in a letter to his son, Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook, Rav Avram Yitzchak, a Kohen Cook, otherwise in Israel, he's the one who is Harav. So he wrote in a letter to his son, Rav Tzvi Yehuda, about taking certain hikes, that if there's a particular hike where there's even a distant concern of danger, you shouldn't participate in it. So Rav Cook is taking the position that when it comes to Shomer Psaim HaShem, you really, really shouldn't rely on it. It could be, you know, son was a Talmid Chacham, so maybe Talmid Chachamim perhaps are not supposed to rely on it. But he was saying that hiking, if there's any concern of danger, don't do it. It's not appropriate to rely on Shomer Psaim HaShem. On the other hand, Rav Moshe Feinstein in a tshuva wrote that, you know, if you're going to go on some sort of trip, you're going to go on a hike. So even if there's some potential danger, if it's a sufficiently distant concern, then that would seem to be acceptable. Okay, so this also comes out in something that the Rush said. So the Rush is comparing when it comes to wine, he's comparing whether libations should be allowed, whether non-Jews should be allowed to, whether it's a problem if non-Jews touch wine, whether that's problematic. Since those concerns don't apply anymore, but he says that he's comparing that to wine that's exposed, and he's saying that that's a little bit different because when it comes to exposed wine, so poisonous snakes are not present, and that's why you weren't allowed to leave wine open, was because there was concern of poisonous snakes. And when it comes to things being forbidden because of potential danger, if there's actually no danger, then there's no decree. It's totally permitted. So he says, regarding many things, we're not careful because of the verse Shomer B'Sayim Hashem. So the Rush seems to be saying that there are things that perhaps, I guess this is an example where we're talking about things that we really don't think are dangerous, or relying on Shomer B'Sayim Hashem because it seems like there's enough reason to believe that's not dangerous. Now, so here's a question. Is this D'oraita or D'rabbanan? Is this from the Torah, or is this D'rabbanan, right? To what extent are we obligated to protect ourselves? Are we allowed to rely on Shomer B'Sayim Hashem? If so, D'oraita, D'rabbanan. So the Rambam, when discussing creating a railing around a roof, which is a straight, explicit mitzvah, so he's discussing this, and then he says, anything where there is danger, you have to remove any possible danger, and be careful about it. This is based on a pasuk, guard yourself carefully, guard your soul. If you didn't remove it, and you left these whatever obstructions that are dangerous, so then you've violated a positive commandment, lo tasib dam, that you shouldn't allow any blood to be spilled. Okay, so according to Rambam, so the obligation to guard ourselves from danger seems to be d'oraita. On the other hand, in the next two halachas, he says, harbedrim asru chachamim, certain things that the sages forbade, which makes it seem like there's certain things that, right, it's a d'rabbanan level that you're not allowed to do it, because they're dangerous. So which one is it? Is it that the Chachamim forbade it, or that the Torah forbade it? Okay, and then he starts to list a number of these things. So Rami Tal suggests that perhaps there's a distinction between injury that you cause to yourself versus injury that you cause to others. So in the first case, we're talking about creating a railing around a roof, making sure that, I believe something about a pit being covered, here also. So those are things where it's not just you in danger, but anybody who's on your property or anybody who might encounter this might be in danger. So therefore, the Rambam says on the right to level, you have an obligation to protect them. But perhaps when it's your things that are dangerous to you, so maybe that's derabbanan. Maybe that's when the Chachamim came in and said that that's forbidden. That actually has some implications for COVID. We can make a distinction between some of the criteria that we have for coming to shul, for example. So, on the one hand, in criteria, it says that people with certain health conditions, people of a certain age, shouldn't come to shul. And yet, some people have chosen to say that that they don't need to abide by that. And we say, okay, because at the end of the day, that's one's own choice, and they're responsible for making their own decisions. On the other hand, masking, social distancing is not optional in shul, because that's where you're creating danger for others. So that's a very practical example of how this could play out. It could be also that, in general, sakana is deraita, meaning I'm not allowed to put on the Torah level, I'm not allowed to put myself in danger, but the Chachamim decided what's included, and things of even a lesser concern, maybe only Aser Drabbanan altogether, or maybe would be even allowed because of Shomer B'Sayim Hashem. So it's kind of like Chol HaMoed. some people say that when it comes to Chol HaMoed, so the Torah in general forbid the framework of doing certain kinds of melacha, and then the Chachamim decided what's included in that. So perhaps that might be true as well. The Levush takes the position, at least here, in another place that might be different, but Levush seems to take the position here that the prohibition of putting oneself in danger is actually derabbanan. And the reason one might say that is because of psukim nishmartem me'od nafshatecham shama lecha shmor nafshatecham me'od. So these psukim, which we quote to say you shouldn't put yourself in danger, so we're really not talking about life-threatening situations, actually talking about Torah, that you should guard your soul carefully, meaning to make sure to follow the Torah. So once you take them out of context, so it has a nice ring to it that sounds very important. So the Chachamim were able to say that at least as an asmachta, something to rely on. So these verses sort of point to the idea that one should be careful with their lives, but that might technically be a derabbanan, right? Okay, so when it comes to so if we were to apply this to COVID, so some risks might be doraita because they are, especially if we look at the Rambam's conception, because it might be a straight out dangerous for our own lives, or it might be a danger to others. And some might only be more on a derabbanan level, if they're less risky, or some you might even be allowed, some risks you might be allowed to take because of Shomer Psayim Hashem. Okay, so there's a Gemara in Ketubot that's a subject of some an interesting discussion that perhaps further defines our point. And it goes as follows. The Gemara says, quotes an individual Amar who says that Shalosh Nashim Sham Shal B'moch. There are three types of women who are allowed to use a contraceptive resorbent. So the potential problem with these resorbents is that they destroy sperm, so that would be a prohibition in and of itself. But the three categories of women who would be allowed to use it, and they are a minor, pregnant woman, and a nursing woman. And the reason for these is that when it comes to a minor, so perhaps she'll conceive and die. A pregnant woman, because there was a concern that the existing fetus would be crushed by another fetus. I'm not going to get into the the way we understand these in 2020, but just presenting it as a Gemara understands it. And concern with the nursing woman was that if she conceives, then her milk would spoil, which would lead her son to be weaned prematurely. This is a statement. This is the opinion of Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir says that they may engage in relations with this resorbent, although we have to understand this language in a second. Chachamim Omrim, sages say, doesn't matter. These women and women in general engage in relations normally. Umin Yoshamayim Mirachamun, and heaven will have mercy on them. Mishum Shenemar Shamar Psayim Hashem. Or preserves the simple. So the Chachamim are acknowledging that perhaps there's some danger here, but because of Shamar Psayim Hashem, then perhaps the moch, the resorbent, is entirely irrelevant. So the question we have to ask is when Rabbi Meir says that they are misham shel b'moch, that they use contraceptive resorbent, is it saying that they have to, or that they should, or that they can? So according to Rashi, it's saying that that these women are allowed to use the moch, with the implication that women who are not in these categories, with the implication that according to the Chachamim, these women may not use the moch. But the Ritva says that this is a little bit difficult, because if there is danger involved, if there's actually danger involved, so you're going to tell somebody that they should rely on Shemar Psayim Hashem and that they absolutely can't do anything to prevent themselves from being endangered, right? You're going to tell her to enter danger. So therefore, Ritva says that no, Rabbi Meir is saying that that women in this category can. Or sorry, women in this category are obligated to engage in relations with the resorbent. They absolutely must in order to save their lives. But the sages are saying they don't have to, but if they want to, they can. If they don't want to rely on Shomer, Psaim, Hashem. Okay, so what's going on here is this discussion as to whether a halacha requires somebody to put themselves in a situation that's risky. So Rashi's saying that, and it's also asking, does Shomer Psaim Hashem sort of define the situation as risky, or does it mean as non-risky, or does it mean that one's allowed to violate a halacha in order to not taste risk? So according to Rashi, it seems like Shomer Psaim Hashem defines the situation as being non-risky, and therefore, according to the Chachamim, they don't use the milk. Whereas Rav is saying, you know, it might be risky, and you're allowed to take the risk, but one doesn't have to take the risk if they don't want to. Okay, so we're making a distinction. So we can make a distinction between defining risk regarding doing mitzvot and versus taking regular life risks. That when we go about our day-to-day life, so yeah, we might encounter risks. Sometimes they're hard to avoid. But it doesn't mean that we have to stay home all day, whether it's COVID or not. It doesn't mean we have to stay home all day in order to avoid any sort of risk. But on the other hand, when it comes to mitzvot, so certainly halacha shouldn't be putting us in that situation. So an example that we see of this is in Mishnah in Yoma, where it says that any potential danger, right, even if there's a doubt whether it's dangerous, it pushes aside Shabbat, Pikuach Nefesh Tochet HaShabbat. So, for example, if a rock slide falls and somebody's under it, and we don't know whether the person's there or not, or whether they're alive or dead, so you, even though it might be a violation of Shabbos to remove the debris, to get rid of the rock slide, it's permitted. Why is that? Because v'chai b'hem v'lo shemu b'hem, that we should live by mitzvot and that we shouldn't die by mitzvot. And as Tosfot says, the purpose of mitzvot is not to put ourselves in danger. The idea when we say v'chai b'hem v'lo shemu b'hem, that no mitzvah should ever have to lead to a Jew being put in danger. So this leads us to perhaps a very big chidush, because you might say that taking risk is an all or nothing question. If something is, you either take no risks at all, or you take risks in life, and that would include doing stuff for halacha. But Tosfos, and I think Tosfos understands, the way Tosfos understands is kind of the pshat, is kind of the simple understanding here. What Tosfos is trying to explain to us is that it's not all or nothing. That it could be that there's a situation where, you know, we might engage in something that's particularly risky, but halacha can't mandate that I do that. So that's perhaps the difference between going to the grocery store versus going to shul during COVID. That you can't say that there's an obligation to daven b'tzibur, because halacha is not supposed to create a situation where we might expose ourselves to risk. And going to shul, you know, even right now where cases are particularly down, and it's not necessarily entirely likely that one's going to get the disease in shul, nonetheless, halacha can't mandate that a person go to shul in the situation. But on the other hand, it doesn't mean that a person shouldn't go to the grocery and should never leave their house, because a person can choose for a non-mitzvah related purpose that if the risk is so far off, like going to grocery store, so, you know, it's not the same thing as going to shul, because it's a very limited time period, and if you go to a store that's particularly empty, so the possibilities are even more far off. So that's the distinction. So likewise in the Gemara in Ketubot about the resorbent, so on the one hand, women can use the resorbent because she shouldn't be required by halacha to take a risk. But on the other hand, if she decides she doesn't want to use it, so she can't, because she can choose to take minimal risk. So, right, so I think this is very important, because, you know, when we think about our current situation, so one can do everything entirely right. There's, you know, I've read stories about this where somebody thought that they were doing everything they possibly could. They were staying at home. They were washing their hands frequently. They never, if they ever went outside, they went out with a mask. You can still get COVID that way. So it was one constantly and unwittingly being overtly serene with somebody violating halacha the whole time because of whatever they were, you know, doing. And on the other hand, if that's true, then, you know, if it's true that that, you know, that one's been constantly exposed to risk, so does that mean we should just risk it all? So obviously it's not all or nothing. There's obviously got to be in between, and that's what Rav Amital is sort of bringing out here from these examples, is that you know, halacha is not going to put us in a situation where we might be taking risk, and we're not going to say, you know, I'm not gonna break Shabbos because I don't think that the risk is real. So you know, if you think that there is some sort of risk, then you know, then you can't violate halacha. But that doesn't mean that every risk taking has to automatically become usur. You know, there's also a potential reason to not take risk is because you might think Shem Psayim Hashem doesn't apply to me. The idea of Shem Psayim Hashem is that Hashem protects us temple, and maybe somebody has particular merits, but what if I think that I'm not necessarily a worthy person? So there too. So especially when it comes to halacha, a person might say, you don't have to rely on Shem Psayim Hashem, for example, to, you know, when it comes to a halachic situation, because a person might say, well, maybe it doesn't apply to me. Maybe I'm more risk than other people. And in fact, risk can be somewhat a subjective thing, even putting out the sort of metaphysical discussion of merits or not. But the Mishnah in the fifth parak of Brachot says that you shouldn't stop your Shmona Esrei even if you have a snake wrapped around your leg. So what about Pikuach Nefesh? So it's, I think it was the record shofar who had an understanding. Rami Tal explained this sort of in the based on the understanding of the record shofar, that if a person feels like the snake around their leg is dangerous, so they should stop their Shmona Esrei. The Mishnah only says that, you know, if you can identify the snake as being non-poisonous and you have a friendly relationship with snakes and you don't think there's anything wrong, so then you don't stop your Shmona Esrei. It might feel weird, it might feel uncomfortable, but nonetheless, you shouldn't stop. So, but again, that might depend on a person's own subjective perception of what risk is. So, just to wrap this up, so how do we perceive Shomer Psayim Hashem now? So, it's obviously usher to do anything that's reckless. So, if you're going to, you know, if you're going to go to a rock concert with 10,000 people in the arena, in an arena that seats 10,000 people, so that's reckless and that's usher. If you're going to a grocery store without a mask, might be an issur d'rabbanan, meaning that you don't necessarily know for a fact that you're going to get it, but that's still a fairly big risk, and also a risk that you're giving to other people. You know, before I was saying that going to shul, before in general we were saying that it's not worth going to shul because of safek pikuach nefesh. Right, that was a justification for keeping shul closed, even though it's a mitzvah to daven. I mean, it might not even be that much of a mitzvah to daven b'tzibur, but even if it's a really good thing to daven b'tzibur, but it was based on what we were saying before. Halacha doesn't expect us to enter even a safek pikuach nefashos, so that's why we weren't doing that, because you're not supposed to put yourself in a situation of pikuach nefesh to keep halacha. But that seems to have transformed to a more subjective case of shomer psayim hashem. That on one hand, you know, you could say that going to shul still involves some risk, but on the other hand, it's not necessarily that likely of a risk enough that you would say that, well, it's entirely forbidden and entirely unwise. Doctors are saying that it's possible to do it safely. It doesn't mean that there's no chance anybody would get it. It just means that there's a way to possibly do it in a way that is far less dangerous than it was before. So with that said, some people might still feel that it's a little bit dangerous, especially based on their condition. So in that case, you don't have to do something dangerous for the purpose of a mitzvah. But now, shul is an example of dashu barabim. Now it's an example where people are doing it. So we can't take that definition that by definition it means that it's not dangerous. We're not going to take that definition. But what we might be saying is that it's reasonably not dangerous enough that we're able to rely on Shem HaMsayim Hashem. Mayor Tversky has a whole essay on Shem HaMsayim Hashem related to COVID. I haven't had a chance to read the whole thing, but it discusses how Shem HaMsayim Hashem only really applies when you have either insufficient knowledge of the reality, so there's nothing really you can do, or where it's completely impossible. And that might make the chiluk between, you know, going shopping versus doing other things. That certain things that you just, you know, can't possibly avoid. So there we could say Shem HaMsayim Hashem. You know, there somehow has to be some sort of normalcy in life. But things we can avoid, maybe it's not Shem HaMsayim Hashem, you shouldn't do it. I think that also explains the distinction between, you know, people saying that, you know, what about driving, what about people driving a car? Okay, isn't driving a car a fairly dangerous activity? So driving a car is something that's ashu barabim, something that people generally do. And we're not saying that it's not dangerous, but it's also something that is a necessity in life. So there we might say Shem HaMsayim Hashem. But that doesn't mean that, doesn't mean in the middle of a pandemic that it gives you a license to do anything entirely risky. So, you know, what would Rav Amital say about the current pandemic? I don't actually know. He might have given this shiur in yeshiva. He might have also said, "Don't do anything too ridiculous or reckless." But whatever it is, we can turn Shem HaMsayim Hashem into a tefillah that, you know, as we go about our lives in these very difficult times, that we're doing our very, very best that we can be doing, and whatever it is, Hashem should protect us and ensure that no harm befalls us. Thank you very much.